Hello and welcome to The Front Page, the show from The Racing Post, where we wrap up everything that's been happening in the racing world over the last 7 days and look ahead to what's coming up. And what a week it was. We had history made at Aintree, a title race back from the dead, and a trailblazer hanging up their saddle. For all of that and lots more, I'm delighted to be joined by Jonathan Harding and Liam Head. Guys, let's get straight to it and dive into what happened at Aintree. John, you were there. Willie Mullins had six runners. One was brought down. The rest finished 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7. Is it possible we're still underestimating what Willie Mullins is capable of?
I think that's probably right. I think the extent of his dominance is, we're just getting to the bottom now of how dominant he is. And it's in races like this where it's so obvious. When it's spread out across a whole festival, you maybe lose sight of it from day to day. But when you have the hardest race to win, famously, the lottery that everybody enjoys betting on, for him to have such a stranglehold on it for the second year in a row just speaks to the level that he is operating at the moment, which is, I mean, it's a different stratosphere to everybody else.
It's absolutely extraordinary. The first five over the last fence were all Willie Mullins. I mean, the sort of sense of despair and hopelessness that his rivals must be feeling. We'll get on to what one of them in particular will be feeling, but we have to, first of all, acknowledge and celebrate what an amazing result it was for the Mullins family, because, of course, Willie's only son, Patrick, was in the saddle on Nick Rockett. And it was quite extraordinary because Willie is not a man who necessarily shows his feelings or emotions. That obviously is a very polite and self-effacing individual. But this really did rock him.
Yeah, and that for me was the juxtaposition in that winner's enclosure is, on one hand, you have this utterly dominant trainer who's done essentially everything there is to do in the sport and is breaking records left, right and centre and batting away praise and everything else. And then on the other side, you have this just swell of emotion at this result. You think, well, you've won everything. Why does this one resonate in the way that it does? And it is because of watching his son win the Grand National. And it was amazing, really, to run into the winner's enclosure, think, right, let's quickly get the quotes. And Willie, what have you got to say? And he couldn't speak. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was fantastic to see because, for all we talk about superpowers and farming races and dominance, and we'll get onto that and it's important, but this was somebody who just, it meant more than anything else to win that race. It still means an awful lot to win the Grand National, and for him this felt like, it just seemed as though for a man that's achieved everything, well, there was one thing left to achieve and now he's done it with his son winning the National.
And Liam, we have to give Patrick plenty of credit here as well. Patrick, of course, who writes for The Racing Post, who won the Racing Writer of the Year award at the H3PA's. Sickeningly talented, I think it's fair to say, because although he's an amateur rider, what he's achieved in the saddle is a match of virtually any professional.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's amateur by name only. What he's done, you know, throughout his career in the saddle has been tremendous. And to top it off by what happened on Saturday, I mean, he was even starstruck by the emotion that was coming from his father on Saturday after the race, and it just shows you that it had so many heartwarming stories around the whole race on Saturday, and it was obviously a touching moment to see the emotion in the family and from the owners as well. So, and it's obviously something. It was, you know, Patrick said after the race, it's a cliche. It's a race he's always dreamed of winning, but it is a race that everyone wants to win. And for him to do it for his own family, and to have his mother and father there was so, so great to see.
Well, Patrick, of course, is a keen sort of student of racing. He understands the history, the heritage, part of why he's such a talented writer. And he's been writing about this race in itself for many, many years. In fact, he won an award many years back giving an account of a ride and over the National Fences. He's going to write for the Racing Post this week. It will be in Wednesday's newspaper online on Tuesday. What an incredible piece that's going to be, the pilot's eye view of what it's like to win the Grand National. I think every racing fan has fantasised about it once or twice.
Yeah, they have. And you know, everyone can dream about winning the world's best race, but to be there, to be in the saddle in the heat of the moment, and to you know, really drive for that finish was it was so great to see. And it was just the perfect story that racing needed for that race.
Well, it was a glorious day. The sun was shining at Liverpool. People were having a tremendous time. But we have to turn now to the race for the title, because there's one person who wasn't having a tremendous time on Saturday, I think it's fair to say, because Dan Skelton must feel like he's in a horror movie, where he's killed off the monster, but then he turns around and it's right behind him, because he went in to entry with what looked like basically an unsurmountable lead in the title, and now he is just £120,000 ahead of Willie Mullins, with the Scottish Grand National coming up, which Willie Mullins dominated last year, and big days at Sandown. So he's really actually looking up against it for the title.
I do feel a bit sick for him, really, because it's just... I spoke to him a few weeks ago at Newbury, and it was the conversation was, well, have you got one hand on the trophy? And he said, no, I'm worried about what might happen at Aintree. Now, Willie Mullins very possibly would have won that race, but the fact that he got the first three home in terms of prize money is just about as bad as it gets. And there was actually, I was watching the race from the winner's enclosure and I could see down in the distance watching it, and I think he might have even been filmed watching it. And I mean, I'd love to see the footage, because I just think you'd see the moment his face dropped. But to be fair, and credit to him, he was obviously asked about it around the later races, and he was pretty philosophical about it when he said, we're getting better, but so too is Willie Mullins, which is a slightly scary thought. It's not over, but selfishly, as somebody who covers the sport and likes these storylines, it's great going into the final weeks of the season with a little bit to play for in that title race. It'll be great fun, as it was last year, but perhaps not if you're Dan Skelton.
No, absolutely. It sets it up, it tees it up perfectly. For the last few weeks, we were calling this race over. In fact, some of the bookmakers stopped betting on it. But it is going to be an absolute thriller in the last few weeks. However, we do need to turn to the question of Mullins' dominance, because there's obviously mixed views on this one, John. Some people, you know, Lee Modishead has written in today's paper, we shouldn't worry about it, we should find ways to salute his enormous achievements. I think, actually, you can do both. You know, we need to recognise and appreciate what an unbelievable achievement this is from Willie Mullins, and how the fact that he keeps scaling new heights is just extraordinary. Equally, at the same time, it's probably not good for racing when the most unpredictable, biggest field handicap is sort of dominated in this way, and of course you know it's building off last year's victory as well.
I'd have a similar view at the risk of getting splinters. I think you have to celebrate it. It's a phenomenal achievement. He's built his empire, and it becomes a bit of a virtuous circle. When you have success, it breeds more success, because if you're one of those massive owners with those really good horses, where are you going to send them? There's only one man, really. But at the same time, like you, I think the options have to be on the table to be constantly reviewing this and what can be done to maybe level the playing field. Now, my view of anything that is brought into a sport in order to increase the competitiveness relates to fairness. If somebody is somehow getting an unfair advantage, then measures have to be taken to bring that into line. As per a football club gets a huge amount of investment, like a Manchester City or something, financial fair play feels like a good example of, well, this is stopping teams getting an unfair and unreasonable advantage. The problem we have in racing is that all Willie Mullins has done is the same as any other trainer has done. He's just done it better and at a greater scale. It's whether he has any, whether there is something about what he's doing or something that can be done to, do you know what I'm trying to say? Something about,
the question is, though, like, has Willie Mullins broken jumps racing because he has become so successful, and success, as you say, breeds investment, and that then creates a situation where instead of actually others coming back to them, the gulf between them increases.
And what can you do? It's hard to say, well, we're going to bring in and limit his numbers and limit this and limit that, because he hasn't done anything wrong. He's just...
Well, I mean,
it's true, isn't it? It's okay. I've been a proponent of, well, the greater good, and it is bad for the sport to have too dominant a power. But then when you start bringing in, do we limit, I know Chris Cook's put this forward, do we limit stable numbers? Do we limit the number of, it's getting into quite dodgy territory, I think.
What's the difference between that and a salary cap or a spending cap or financial fair play in football?
I just think because it's sort of financial fair play is stopping those external factors where it's outside of sporting achievement, where it's simply throwing money at a situation, whereas Mullins is where he is because of sporting achievement and because of his own merits rather than someone basically just throwing in and giving someone an unfair, or not unfair, but giving someone a leg up. The fact that it is all in-house and it's all Willie Mullins, it's hard to then turn around and say, well, we want to limit the number of owners you can train for or limit. Mm. I do think the National actually, sorry, I don't want to go on too long, but the National I think would be a good test bed for this idea because it is supposed to be a lottery.
Yeah.
The number of trainers have dropped, the number of owners represented, I assume as well, have dropped. Yeah. I need to check that out. That might be a good race if we're going to look at runner caps and things like that. That might be the logical place to start.
The numbers for the Grand National, when it was a 40-runner race, the last time it was a 40-runner race in 2023, there were 29 different trainers represented. 2022, there were 28. Similar going back into the previous decade, always around that sort of high 20s, 30 trainers represented. In the two races since it went to 34 runners, there's been 16 represented. You know, and that's obviously partly a product of the field size reduction, which tends to disproportionately affect smaller trainers, but it's also just a reflection of the enormous dominance of Willie Mullins and a small handful of other trainers. You know, it's a tricky one to say they should be punished for this, Liam, you know, and I don't think punished is the right word, but I think we can simultaneously say that reduction in the number of trainers represented is not to the benefit of the Grand National.
No, because you obviously want, like, the Grand National is the race that everyone wants to be involved with, and no matter how big or small the trainer is, you want to make sure there's as many representatives as possible to make sure that, you know, that there's a sort of
the fairy tale angle is alive.
Yeah, exactly, and it gives everyone the chance. You know, like if we've touched on it, it is a lottery. Like anyone can win the race. We've seen it in the past. The odds, you know, the odds of horses winning, they vary in the last few years. So you need to sort of almost level that playing field to ensure that it is fair for everyone. You know, you see horses just missing out because the standard of quality got a lot better. And undoubtedly, that is because you've got trainers like Willie Mullins, who obviously has got the stronger horses in the race. So he's sort of represented a lot more than your smaller trainers, so it's a difficult position to sort of think about and where we go from here, but it's obviously something that we need to touch to make sure that we don't go sort of down from here.
Well, the potential consequences, of course, if we get it wrong, is that interest in this great race, that's a wonderful shop window for horse racing, diminishes, and that sort of brings us to some of the early signs about, you know, where does Saturday's race stand? Attendance figures at entry were up, which is possibly not surprising given what an absolutely magnificent day it was. It looks like turnover was around, kind of betting turnover was flat, maybe up a little bit year on year. TV figures though, cause for alarm, I think. 5.2 million watched peak figure on ITV. 6.1 million last year, which was itself a low. Going back to 2019, it was almost 10 million. So you're basically, you know, the sort of, you've lost half the audience from the peak. Now, there's a lot that goes into this. It was a sunny day, people were outside. The percentage share of audience was actually quite good. Fewer people watch live TV than they used to do. But at the same time, clearly that's a big drop.
Yeah, massive drop. And like you say, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what that is. I would be skeptical at thinking it's to do with who wins the race and the nature of the race or anything else. But it is possible, you know, as we sort of discussed coming in, that if people are tuning in every year and they see the same person winning it every year, they might think, well, actually, this is sewn up. But I also had the thought, Tiger Woods used to win everything. It didn't stop people watching golf. I think that it's still the race, the spectacle. And I think most people tuning in are just seeing how their horse they selected randomly and pick the colours or whatever. Not in a disrespectful way, but you know, the average person watching it, I don't think will be too bothered about who trains the horse as such. That's a bit of a tangent. But overall, yeah, it is slightly concerning. But I think there's so many factors that you can't be too alarmed about anyone in particular.
Couple last things to sort of pick up on here. you talk about people being focused on the horse they backed. The other horse that got a lot of focus after the race was Broadway Boy, who suffered a really bad fall. There was a huge amount of misinformation on social media, but also I think there was a bit of a vacuum, and people have rightly said that when there was an update to give, it was given. But I think which was really clearly missing was a recognition that so many people were concerned about Broadway Boy, and even if there wasn't any information to provide, that there was a sort of a necessity to say, he's being looked at by the vets, we're going to bring you an update as soon as possible. Because instead, a lot of people on social media basically said, racing's protestations about welfare being all important have been shown up here because they didn't update.
Yeah, I take that point. I think people fill that vacuum then with the misinformation. There was a lot of people on social media that you sense were almost hoping for the worst for Broadway, which is probably a desperate thing to say. But there is a sense that the people who sort of in racing and have an interest in it were desperate for there to be good news. And the people who suggest that, you know, they're all for horses and racing is cruel or whatever it is, they were the ones in a lot of cases sort of pushing this idea that he might have died or suffered this, you know, hideous fate, which is an interesting paradox. Mm. But as for the information, yeah, I think generally it's a hard one to get exactly right, but I agree, in the absence of a firm update, no update is still an update. Yeah. I think just saying we're trying to get to the bottom of this, we know you at home are all very concerned, yeah, the vets are doing, you know, this is what the vets are doing, this is, I think there's the truth never hurt an honest cause, did it? So I think the more information you can put out, the better.
Agreed. Right, we have a lot more to catch up on from Aintree, but let's turn away from the Grand National now, and we've got the perfect man in the studio for the Constitution Hill segment, because of course, Liam, you are a Lambourne correspondent. Another fall for the great hurdler of Lambourne, Constitution Hill. Where does he go from here?
I think, all being well, he goes to Punchtown. Like the plan, you know, the show goes on, and that's the plan that Nicky Henderson wanted to do before Aintree after Cheltenham, and I think he should stick to it. I mean, obviously it does feel a sense of deja vu here. We're talking about another Constitution Hill fall, you know, as we saw at Cheltenham. We were hoping the one at Cheltenham was just a total one-off, but it was almost identical to what we've seen at Cheltenham, given the way that he fell. But there's obviously something not quite right there. It's clear to see, so something needs fixing. What that is, who knows? There's a number of factors, but I think they've just got to roll the dice now and head to Ireland and just try and end the season with a positive, really.
Yeah, and so obviously all hoping that Constitution Hill will bounce back in Ireland. But two falls in a row, building off a performance before that where there was a pretty similar mistake, which thankfully didn't end in a fall. You know, so a lot of people are now thinking, well, he's obviously learned this bad habit, yeah, or there's something about his technique, something about the way he's racing that is causing this. And then speculating on what could be potentially done to address it. I think the two things which people have obviously landed on is go over fences to teach some respect for the obstacles, and a new jockey, because potentially there's something about that Nico Constitution Hill bond right now that's not quite firing properly. What do you stand on those two ideas?
I think possibly over a fence, you know, that's definitely not ruled out. You know, there was obviously talk about it a couple of years ago that he was going to go over the larger obstacles. In terms of a new jockey, I don't think that'll happen. Nico de Voinville is the stable jockey. Michael Buckley's defended him to the ends of the earth, as we've seen on TV over the weekend. And we've seen what Nico can do with the ride that he gave John Bond the day after at Aintree. So I can't see that happening in terms of that. What I would say is we have to understand that Constitution Hill has had a year off. Yes, he came back at Kempton. He won at Kempton. He did what he had to do at Kempton. You know, it was a professional job. He saw off the threat of Lossie Mouth. He went on to Trials Day. The blip at the end obviously was very unconvincing. We thought that was just something that was just a one-off. But then we've obviously seen the two falls. And it is a shame to see what has happened since he's come back and since he's won. But there's no denying that he's still a talented horse. And Nicky Henderson is obviously the right man to get to the bottom of this, of what the issue is. And I firmly believe that we'll see him back to his very best soon. And I hope that is at Punchestown. Obviously, in the race itself on Thursday at Aintree, he was travelling so well, wasn't he? And he was going really well. But the pace just sort of took a turn, didn't it? When he almost got trapped in underneath under Boinville. And you can almost sense that something like that was going to happen, because he had to change direction in the race and he was sitting in behind the Irish horses. So it went from sort of 0 to 100 in the space of seconds.
Yeah. There's a real danger now, isn't there, John, that the legacy of Constitution Hill is not going to be what we thought it would be, which is that one of the all-time great talents, but in fact one of the all-time most frustrating talents.
Yeah, I mean, we quite rightly build these horses up, and people love unbeaten horses, and they are, we're very quick to build them up to be greats, and then the slightest error and then suddenly it's all over and the legacy's gone and they weren't as good as we thought they were. I think his legacy is what it is. I think you can't get shy away from the fact he's now fallen twice when he's expected to win in those big races. He's still a fantastic racehorse. He's still at his very best, one of the best hurdlers we've seen, I think.
But he hasn't proven that, basically.
No, he's just not.
And that's the issue, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but to me, I don't mind that. I quite like a mixed legacy. I don't need something that's perfect. I quite like the fact he's had some frailty and he's had some problems and he's bounced back and he's won races again. I think the ideal ending to all of this is he sort of, when the time comes to retire, he retires on a high. I'd hate for him the plans to go to Punchestown. If he wins at Punchestown, that'd be a great way to end the season. And then I'd love to see him over a fence. From the conversations I've had, not being obviously an expert myself, but you can see the logic. And I certainly like the idea of him going over fences when it was being discussed before.
Would you change the jockey?
No, I wouldn't. I don't buy that myself. Okay. I really don't.
Right, let's turn to Paul Nicholls, who also had a good entry. He had two Grade 1 winners. More of indication for Caldwell Potter, who's gone from being one of the all-time bad purchases to everyone saying what a fantastic...
Good value now.
Very good value. He just had bad feet, just had to get the feet right.
This is it. That was a great story. Look, what I like about interviewing Paul Nicholls is he speaks his mind. And a lot of the time... After Cheltenham, when Caldwell Potter won, he said, look, I said all along, this isn't a bad horse, you just have to be patient. Everyone wants everything yesterday, and actually, when you have these horses, if you just mind them a little bit, don't expect everything to happen overnight, then good things happen. And it pretty much was the three really expensive horses that went and did it at Aintree. I mean, Regent Stroll nearly won as well. Khalif de Burleigh, Caldwell Potter, I mean... Look, it's vindication for that patient approach. For all, there would have been months this year where he was tearing his hair out thinking these horses aren't perhaps at the level I want them to be.
What's the ceiling for the two of them? Obviously, respectively, hopefully going to be aimed at the Gold Cup and the Champion Chase. What do you think?
Well, then they bump into Willie Mullins, don't they?
So. Say
or
no
Gavin,
more.
Or Gavin Cromwell. No, I think that's absolutely, that's got to be. They're young horses. You know, they as I think Nicholls put quite nicely yesterday, they're at the bottom rung of that ladder for those sorts of races, and they've got to now get there. But at this stage, they're definitely viable, aren't they?
One last thing before we wrap up this romp through Aintree. The biggest sort of individual prize given out at Aintree was not, in fact, to do with the Grand National, but was the £500,000 that Harry Skelton got for winning the inaugural David Power Jockeys Cup, which is about 10 times what the Grand National winning jockey received. Obviously not something which has made a big splash this year, the David Power Jockeys Cup, introduced primarily by Flutter, who funded it, to try and give a sort of narrative through the season. I think the value of it probably needs to be judged once we see the second series of Championsfield Gallop, for which it was very closely aligned, but that sort of juxtaposition between the 500 grand won for winning this and the much lower winning prize for the Grand National winning jockey has obviously caught people's attention. What do we think about the David Power Jockeys Cup, Liam?
I think it's a good initiative to sort of recognise the talented jockeys that we have in the weighing room. On the other hand, it does take away the emphasis of, like you say, the Grand National, these big races with big prize pots and the whole history behind these big races. And in a way as well, the jockey's title is, the title race sort of looks like it's come to an end with Sean Bowen champion elect, but there seemed to have been a lot more emphasis on this Jockey's Cup than the actual title race.
Mm.
Because the prize money is obviously a lot higher.
Yeah.
But so you can look at it in two ways. It's been well promoted by sort of, you know, the sport, ITV and so on. But there is a lot more. There seems to be a lot of emphasis on sort of the whole competition rather than these big races.
Yeah.
It's going to sound awful, but I've really not followed it.
Well, I don't think people have
that
in
closely
fairness.
as a play by play. I just really haven't. It hasn't.
Jockeys obviously love it because it's a huge investment.
Yeah,
and they have then done a lot of sort of like, there's been a lot of stuff on sort of TikTok and Instagram and stuff, which is all important and great that the jockeys have bought into it. But people, the average racing fan probably doesn't know it exists. And I do have a slight concern that if this is the sort of central theme of the next series of Champions Full Gallop, that it's going to be very insincere indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I like, my default position with anything is in racing is let's try a new idea, because I've spent so many hours writing about racing not embracing any change at all. So I'm all for jockeys competing for that level of prize money. I think that's great. It's investment. It's a good idea. I just think it's going to take time to bed in if they pursue it again next year. And it just felt for me a little bit like an extra thing rather than something that I could really sink my teeth into. And that might just be the way that it, you know, if it went down to the final day as per the Trainers' Championship, then maybe I'd be singing, probably would be singing a different tune because you're engaged by
but
it.
But this is the irony, of course, because they sort of introduced this to ensure that they had a season-long narrative to sort of capture it for Champions Full Gallop. And then we have the most exciting conclusion to a Trainers' Championship potentially ever. But that's a subject for another day. We must move on to Dubai World Cup, which in a quirk of the calendar fell on the same day as the Grand National. Frankie Dettori, bankrupt one week, winning big in Dubai the next. Possibly the most Frankie Dettori saga of the storyline just yet.
Yeah, since the last one. Yeah. I mean, there's just, yeah, it's all part of his story. I mean, we've had books written about it already, but I'm up for a Netflix documentary if anyone, you know, fancies.
There is actually one coming out about the Triple Crown, actually, which actually looks pretty good. And Frankie and the ubiquitous Nick Lock feature in the trailer. It looks pretty good.
Well, he's just, you know, Frankie Dettori just is a walking story, isn't he? you know, which is, as a person, you want your personalities in sport to be that way.
Mm.
Obviously, this is not an ideal situation for him at the moment, but to kind of go and do it in Dubai was just typical. And then to nearly win the big one as well. I was watching it on the TV between sort of trying to write up everything else. And to see him coming, I thought, well, that's just, of course. Yeah. I just thought, of course, he's going to win it. He
nothing
didn't, but it just felt like the most Frankie Dettori thing ever to go and do that in Dubai.
HMRC also disappointed.
Yeah.
To get that share. He might come back for Epsom.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, he's Mr. Epsom amongst Kenny many
McPeak.
Things.
Yeah. It would be something, wouldn't it?
It'd be a good story. But it'd be one of those stories as well that would appear in various other bits of various other newspapers. I think that would go beyond racing if he's back and given all the backstory and everything. It's a sports writer's dream, isn't it?
Yes, certainly would get racing into different parts of the newspapers. But let's return to Dubai World Cup just for another quick minute. Mixed night for Europeans, Liam. Believing got on the scoreboard in the sprint, fantastic. Elsewhere, the Japanese were pretty ascendant. They are doing everything right on the global stage, aren't they?
They are, and you know, to see them dominate the big races once again just shows you the caliber of horses they have over on that side of the world. It was great to see, and it just brings you excitement that sort of the big festivals over here, we might see a lot more international superstars coming over and making it a proper global event. So it's exciting for the racing itself, but obviously, like you said, that the Europeans probably didn't have the sort of Dubai World Cup they may have hoped.
Mm. Let's finally finish with some of the jockeys who en masse decided to retire.
Yeah, great time.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Alan Johns hung up his saddle. He's going to pursue a career in media. He's been doing lots of really good stuff, actually, that I'm sure he'll do well there. Nick Schofield, he's had a fantastic career, has also packed it in. But perhaps the highest profile, with no disrespect to the other two, was Hayley Turner. A trailblazing jockey, Liam, and a role model. Do we properly appreciate how much she's done for the sport?
I think we will now that she's not going to be riding sort of most weeks. You only have to look at what she's done for the sport, obviously getting to 1,000 winners. And she's obviously been a role model for the likes of Safi Osborne and Holly Doyle. And it does inspire the next generation of female jockeys coming through to see someone of her level, you know, achieve what she's done in the sport. Obviously, I know that she left the sport and then she came back, you know, a few years ago. But what she's done has been incredible. And, you know, what a female jockeys can only dream of sort of having half the career that she's had in.
I think most jockeys, never mind female jockeys. And John, what's Hayley's legacy and how has the weighing room changed since she sort of broke through?
Well, that's the key thing. And I think her legacy is the fact that it is almost now a non-story that female jockeys, sort of with the likes of Holly Doyle, it feels kind of wrong to even characterise them as female jockeys because they are competing on such a level playing field. And I think Hayley Turner has an awful lot to do with that because she was competing on a level playing field at a time when it wasn't level in the slightest, when the atmosphere and the circumstances and being a female jockey was a major deal. Mm. I think it's because of the way that she was able to elevate herself and persevere and ride winners and ride really well that we're now in a situation where it's almost the, you know, so what? Doesn't matter if you're male or female, if you can do the job. And I think you look at Holly Doyle and you look at Safi Osborne, that's the legacy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well said. We're going to wrap up there, gents. Thank you very much for all your contributions. And thank to you at home as well for joining us on the front page. We'll be back again next week with more assessment of all the big stories. And of course, there's comprehensive coverage on the Racing Post through the week and indeed a full platform of fantastic video shows coming up. So do stay tuned and we'll see you again soon. Thank you.